Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Kia ora and welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby Pod No Mai Haere Mai. And boy, did the All Blacks and the Black Ferns struggle on the weekend. So much to talk about, so much to dissect. New Zealand rugby isn't the place that you would expect it to be on an end-of-year tour, with two teams that generally go away, get their wins and come home. Certainly not in that position right now. I'm Ross Carl, joined by James Parsons, former Blues and All Blacks hooker, and also Bryn Hall, Māori All Blacks and Crusaders halfback. And boys, it's been a tough weekend, and I suppose the biggest question, let's go right to the front of this. When we look back through the season and look at the context of this loss and the way that they lost to Ireland physically, the way that they struggled to get ball, the way they didn't work at the breakdown, when you look at it, the way they did that against Fiji, the way they did that against South Africa, this trend is alarming. And Jipper, does it worry you?
No, I don't think it worries me, because when we've seen the All Blacks get it right, they've been unstoppable this year. And I think there's been moments throughout the season where we've spoken in depth how clinical the All Blacks breakdown's been and their clean out to provide that front foot ball for guys like Bodie and Ko to take advantage of. I think the one thing people forget is it's not that they can't, deliver that physical presence up front. It's when you're making that amount of tackles and you're on defence for long periods. I mean, they still tackled at 92% and they tackled over 200 times. Like, some of their physical prowess was pretty impressive on the flip side of the way they held them out and the fact they went into halftime ahead. Like, man, that was some resilient D. But that empties your tank. We've seen it time and time again. You can hold on. But as Ireland had all the ball, they had territory, they played a lot of footy in their half. And because they hadn't had so much of that energy-sapping D, when they ran onto the ball, they ran with that presence and that physical prowess that it looks like they can do it and we can't. But it's, man, the amount of tackles, like, I don't even know how many Dalton Papali'i made, but he was a man possessed. So that is something like to consider. Because of all that defence, we didn't really allow ourselves to be able to physically dominate up front, because you only have so much gas in the chamber, I suppose.
That in itself is concerning, though, Bryn, isn't it? You know, whether it's drop ball or misdirected kicks, they're not keeping the ball.
Yeah, they're not. But I think at the same time, you know, when you make 158 tackles in the first half, you know, if we look around our attack and not having many opportunities, you know, the one opportunity we really did have was Will Jordan's one in the 61st minute, because the way with line speed pressure, we talk around phase play attack and being able to find the space to try and beat that line speed attack. And if you look at the setup with when Richie gives it to Davey and he gives that long ball, there weren't too many times that the All Blacks on phase play shape was set up like that to be able to try and get that bridge pass or have options around that. And so when you see Davey give that pass, you see the wing, I think it's James Lowe in that instance, has to make a read. And we talk around phase play shape and defending that, you've got to have animation around that and get them questioning it. And so when Davey gives that pass, and then Rico does really well to give that to get that kick from Will Jordan and then gives it back to Will Jordan on the inside, that's really the only time in our attack that I saw was that kind of set up picture and then trying to score off that. Whereas if you look at Ireland, the amount of loop players that Sexton had, or the hard downlines and animation of variety in their attack, was consistently questioning the All Blacks and making them think on the run with what was coming at them. So you've got to give a massive pat on the back to Ireland with around the ruthlessness and the ability to have that when the contact collisions around the breakdown. And look, Jamison Gibson-Park had 109 passes on the weekend. And When you can have those kind of passes and a halfback giving that ball in and out just like that, it just shows how good your efficiency and your breakdown, your clean out, and getting that right entry. Because look, like Jip said, I can't believe we went into half time, up considering how many tackles we've had in that first half. But we just didn't get many opportunities. And Johnny Sexton brought up a really good point, and his post match interview was around, in the past, if they would have felt that the All Blacks were going ahead with that much ball, they probably would have like dropped their head and been able to be a little bit frustrated. But the word that they used was process, and having that process mindset of winning each moment every single time. And look, they did that. They came out in the second half and scored two tries in that 43rd and the 50th minute just after half time. So you talk around the minutes before half time, they missed it with those line outs just before half time, which is probably a big moment. But they came back and scored two great tries in the first 10 minutes of the post in that second half, which really gave them momentum in that second half.
I think also their attack structure was simple. And it was the same sort of, you speak about those loop plays, they've almost got four options off that. And I think, because of that simplicity, it was literally, let's win our set piece, let's carry hard around the corner, and then once we switch back and we have the ability to do a loop play or we can send our key up, it was, you're just doing your job, like you said, that process. They stayed in that process, they kept doing the same thing over and over again, and they were relentless about it. Like any penalties, so often not, we would have seen go for three, but they just kept going to the corner and then adjusted that plan as they went through the game. But I think it was just that clarity of those processes and the willingness to keep doing the same thing over and over and believing it will break the defence down eventually, which it did, was impressive. But again, like you say, Bryn, it's not like we can't do that as well. I still think even though that was a cool back try for Akira, it was no different. He runs a hard down line. There's a guy out the back, and Reeks looks out the back and then gives that short ball, which is debatable if it came out of the hands forward. But those are the sort of things, if we can just keep throwing those at teams rather than, I suppose if you look at the kick stats, we kicked more than Ireland, but we had such little ball. So it showed that we'd eventually get the ball back, but then we'd give it back to them straight away.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say more so just how more impressive I was with their attack, because look, we know that the All Blacks love to attack, and we've talked around Jip, the variety that we have in our game when we are going well, we're going forward, we've got, you think of like Richie or Bodie from that kind of pod and then going into that space. What I loved about Ireland, if we look at the week before when they played Japan, they were going out the back to six and hitting those two forwards, going in that down line, going into that space. But even if you look in the first passage of play, the ability that they're all set, like, they've got the three forwards out the back to Sexton, the two balls, the down lines off Sexton, and then gives it up to Bundy, our key, and then their shape. And early on in that first half, they actually got around the All Blacks through that. But how that works is because the go-forward ball and that quick ball doesn't give the ability for the All Blacks to be set in their defensive line, and so they were a little bit short on the edge. But what I love to see is, that, like you said, Jip, there's the loop plays. They're all clear in their roles, but that structure, that's their main structure that they have. Three forwards, 10 out the back, and then the two forwards running off the 10 and the hinge, and then going out the back to Bundy, our key. So I loved that, and what that shows me is that, they're all clear on what they want and know exactly where they need to be, and their speed to set and where they are in their attack was world-class on the weekend. I was thoroughly enjoyed seeing it.
Yeah, but can you explain the hinge?
Sorry, no, Hins is just like the 10 out the back, and it's just like a release pass. So I've just given away our harbour moves there, Ross. Sorry, mate.
He's playing games. That's a Crusaders. It's a hinge. Okay, good to know. But I think the difference there is with all the stuff that, bodies in motion, speed to set, we know as players, it's always easier when you've got the ball. Like, defense is energy sap. Sometimes you can utilize defense to get, that physical dominance and you win those sort of collisions, but you're not on it the whole time. Whereas, because Ireland had so much ball, they had the ability to stay in their system and speed to set, and they didn't have that massive attention to kick the ball away. So I think that was a big factor, and it was just their game plan. Like, they coached extremely well and learned from past performances where they'd had success against the All Blacks and replicated it again.
What worries you, Bryn, about the All Blacks and the way they're going about it? What concerns you the most? Because it didn't work.
Oh, look, I just think, and we've talked about it probably in the past, just around defensive pressure. You know, we've talked a lot on the attacking side of the ball, and you talk around the breakdown, and that's always going to be a big thing when you probably lost a game, not getting that breakdown right. And no doubt it'll be a continuation this week going to France, and they'll want to get that right. But I think it was just more so you are making as many of those tackles you did make. We made 150 in the first half and 220 odd or whatever it was for the duration of the game. But I think it's when you do have those opportunities, and when we don't have momentum, it's been able to then build pressure and then make points from that. So I think more so in the second half, I probably saw we did have a few opportunities, but, you know, just forced passes, you know, they go into touch, or we weren't able to build phase. And so, yes, you know, the All Blacks would be thinking they'll be pretty happy with the defense and how much percentage they were, and they made the tackles. But I think even though if you're under pressure through line speed pressure or making a lot of tackles, the ability is a big test match just to be able to get it right, whether it's on your face play attack, like I talked about with Davey. That was really the only time that I saw that our face play shape was set up for us to be able to question the Island defense. So even, you know, he heard Ian Foster talking around the backs taking a bit more accountability around working hard and giving, I guess, a pat on the back for the forwards moving forward, because they worked so hard with the tight stuff with defensively and trying to clean out rucks. It's more so on the backs trying to help that out. And so whether that's a continuation of people that won't be playing or other guys given opportunity, but I think we might see a little bit better around our face play shape and trying to get the rewards of what Ireland did, and really asking questions and making line breaks and really questioning the defences at the moment.
Bryn, do you think that Brad Moore, you've worked with him a lot, do you think he'll be looking at those loop plays? Because if you look at the Scotland-South Africa game, they did a loop play and managed to get on the outside of the rush D of the Springboks. Do you think we may see some adjustments in that phase play attack and seeing that brought into our game?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And you have seen it throughout the duration of the Rugby Championship, and even in this in these autumn series and that kind of stuff, with them trying to do those loop plays. But it hasn't probably been to the extent of what Ireland do. Like, they've got their own kind of set play that they do have that loop. But if you look at the kind of the Australians of how they kind of present themselves inside, so you've got that down runner, but you've got the 10 and the winger out the back as a rover, and they come really late. So it's really hard for a winger, or if you're on that edge, to make the decision, because you see them quite late. So whether they can actually get that kind of structure, it might be a little bit too late now with how late it is in the season. But I think what can drive that is setting really early and being able to see what's in front of you. Because it's really hard when you've got that rush of the line speed pressure coming at you. If you're not set and you've got pressure coming at you, you're not going to be able to get that ball away. So if they can continue to keep doing what they do with Davey as the example, I hate to use Davey's one as an example, but they were all set in that position to be able to have the down runner out the back and the bridge pass. So I think for Brad, he'll be really harping around, boys, get set, make sure you get back into position real quick, because you can see what's in front of you, and you can even use the kick opportunity as well. So I know it's probably a little bit hard on the weekend just due to the fact that we're on defence so much in that first half and the duration of the game. You probably think energy zapping and not being able to get set and be able to see what's in front of you. So I think that'll be a continuation, Jip. They've got to get back, get set, and see what's in front of you, like I used with that David Havili example.
Jipper, how come the lightning quick ball came for Ireland and not New Zealand? What does New Zealand need to do better at the breakdown to ensure that that ball's come to TJ and there's more space for the attack structure?
Yeah, look, I think we sort of touched on it before. With the Springboks, they got turnovers because we weren't, getting into those breakdowns quick enough with that rush there. And then, you know, even last week we spoke about incorrect entries a lot of the time, because when they bring that rush D, we're sort of flat-footed and guys are overrunning their support lines. And if you look at, the Springboks-Scotland game and the depth they operated their attack at, and if you saw most of their tries came on the edge due to two big passes backwards, and then their edge is quite flat in attack and they really penetrated down that 15-metre channel. And I think maybe taking a few steps back so that we can, even if they do rush on us, we can actually punch onto the ball, but then also our support players are punching in behind and making that sort of dominated clean through the body and not having to slow their foot speed or anything. They can just get rid of those bodies. So I think depth is a big thing, and timing onto that ball so that we're really punching onto it. And I suppose the biggest thing, and I think Ian Foster's alluded to it, is the decision-making on attack. And making sure that we're making the right ones to the pitches we're seeing. And if not, what's our bailout? What do we go to get us still across the advantage line if we can't get on that edge through a bridge pass or a kick, or by having good depth and getting around it? what do we go to? What does our system allow us to still get a quick ball? Because it doesn't have to be a 15-meter carry. If you can still get a good carry, cleaners in behind quickly and move bodies, then that next ruck's really quick, and you can be really flat and fast there because they've got to take steps back. And so I do think it's that timing. Biggest thing is that timing onto the ball, and I suppose the lines of those support players so that they can be vicious in those cleans.
Bryn, you've played with Sam Whitelock a lot. I mean, he's a guy who knows his rugby. He's a rugby geek. You know, being able to pull a team in and make those adjustments on the field, how difficult is that in a test match situation when you're in that kind of position? Because it didn't seem to quite happen, but he's a guy we know who can do that.
Yeah, I think, oh, look, Sam's an astute rugby player. He's got a great rugby mind. And if you even look in the rules, I think there was I can't remember what scenario it was, but there was a rule that was in place, and that I remember the commentator saying, oh, that's good rugby now, so I can't remember what it was. But he's got a great rugby brain, and so I think more so he would have been frustrated possibly with just how the tempo of the game was going. And look, this is no gripe on the refs or anything, but I think the flow of the game is important to be able to continue to keep having momentum. And I think, look, I know there's a lot of communication with the ref and, you know, going to the third official or then the touch judges coming in, but it just always seemed like it was really stunting the growth and the momentum of the game, which is great for Ireland because you want to slow down the ball. And any time, you know, the South Africans did it really, really well in the two test matches they had, would slow it down and not be able to get the All Blacks to have the flow that they want. So I think that's probably a thing that Sammy might have been a little bit frustrated with. But at the same time, I know Sam, he would have been given, coming in as groups, and you could probably see in the game that whether the forwards were together as a tight group or the backs, they would have been talking around the solutions of what they needed to do. But sometimes, look, you can always have the solutions and have the thought process and talk about it, but then it's been able to give the actions of being able to do it. So I think it'll be a great learning, not only for Sam, but I think more so for the players of, like, what can they do? And I think Chip brings up a really good point around when it's not going our way and what we need to have our bailout, how do we do that under pressure? Because we've seen it against the South Africans in the second test match, even in the first test match as well, and then Ireland on the weekend, who probably had a lot of momentum with ball on hand, and we were more so defending a lot of periods of those games. But sometimes you're not going to have that, and you've just got to be able to find a way to really grind out test matches in. You know, Ireland probably did that a little bit better, and especially in that second half, it'd been a little bit more ruthless than the All Blacks.
I felt like against Wales, Jipper, the pick and go was that bailout, and it seemed to work. They've obviously got it there.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they made great penetration through the middle of rucks and getting in behind and just tightening things up. And what that also does is it tightens the D up. It would suck defenders in, which then will allow that space on the edge. And if there is a shooter, well, he's actually isolating himself as a defender, and if you can beat him, you normally can you know, pick off down that 15-metre channel. So it's definitely there. Like I said at the start of this podcast, I still think, you know, we've got the, I suppose, the tools in the tool belt. It's just making sure that those decisions that are being made. And I think the biggest thing that is catching us off guard is when we're making really good line breaks. You know, if you look at a lot of the turnovers, a lot of the missed cleans were when we made line breaks. And if you look at the attacking stats, we made more line breaks than Ireland. But sometimes you get, I suppose, detached from your support players. And we all know, obviously, James Lowe's tackle on Reeks. And then we missed that clean. And I think it was Peter O'Mahony, that got the turnover there, which was quite a critical time. And I think so it's understanding how we can, I suppose, slow ourselves down or buy time for our support play to get there. And then obviously the other one we've seen is when we get in that rush D and it shuts us off from the edge and we go back into the traffic. And if we can sort those two out, which I know we can, like I've got no concerns over it, I think we'll be a better force. But understanding that it's a little bit like Ireland, like I felt like they just had maybe three options and they just kept doing the same thing, you know, like that. That is, you know, that is it's smart footy in the sense that you're sapping energy, but you're also not cluttering your players' minds, as in their attacking minds. They just know their role and they've just got to nail that. So maybe, you know, stripping things back and decluttering so that, you know, just simple targets and, you know, building their game from there.
So clarity and perseverance, Bryn, that's the solution here, because people have always got the knives out for Ian Foster. People always want change in the starting 15, but in this particular case, maybe clarity and perseverance is actually the solution.
Oh yeah, look, they're a professional side, and look, they don't lose very often. But I think the biggest thing with the All Blacks, whenever they do lose, you can imagine those reviews will be really tough and honest. And I think that's a great thing about that environment with how competitive and I guess the excellence that they do have. There'll be a lot of things that even like Ian Foster and Sam Whitelock have talked about in the post-match press conference around what that solution is going to be like and the learnings that they're going to take from their Irish game going into the French game. So I don't think there will be a lot of changes. I think there just will be some hard honesty within the group and the players and the management. But that's what's so good about the All Black environment. They'll want to rectify a lot of those things, and if anything, they'll be a little bit more on edge this week, knowing the things that they wanted to do more so on the attacking side and not being able to implement the game plan that they wanted to. But there are some positives you can take away. Like whenever you can take away 88 or 90% with the amount of tackles that they did do, they'll be happy around that. But I think more so for them, they'll be having that bone deep review and getting all the things right. And then I guess this week it'll be a hell of a training week for them. I can imagine that they'll ramp it right up, and they'll be on edge and being real competitive in training to want to put in a performance to finish off a long year. This is their 14th test, and so they want to go out with a bang but get that right.
I think also, like, it's not clarity, I probably use the wrong word, it's more simplicity. And that's what I mean by, not having so much clutter is, maybe it's just early on, it's run hard, clean hard, get around the corner, suck defenders in, and have that simple phase play attack as well. Because I just don't think it's as like drastic a fix as probably it's been made out. Like, it's if they get two or three good cleans and they're playing, that 2 second ball, we know how dangerous they are. And I think they do have the ability to, even if they get stunted, to reset, get to an edge, and then be able to. I think it's those little simple fixes that they can make into their game plan. I don't think, like, they won't need, I don't think they'll change anything. Like, you're not going to be able to do it in a week. It'll just be more the accuracy and I suppose the direct nature and the simplicity of it that I think we'll see this weekend.
With that simplicity, do they need more of a Patrick Tuipulotu, more of an Akita Ioane, guys who get over the advantage line consistently? Because it seems like Ardie's probably the only guy right now who you can definitely back to make sure you're getting through that advantage line, Brent.
You can, but I think probably the biggest thing that they can do is be able to put them in a position to do it, not just like by themselves. So they're not going into a brick wall, and so it's getting the people in place for that face play shape or whatever to be able to animate and be able to get to ask questions defensively. So you can have an Akira on the edge. You can have Patrick Tuipulotu for an example. Yes, they can, because obviously it's a good power game that they do bring. But I think more so for the whole group, it's being able to get it into a position where everybody's in the right position. You look at the Ireland attack. Face play attack. The All Blacks, we've seen that in the past that they can do that. But if you're not winning the physicality and the collision aspect of the game, then it makes everything harder. So it'd probably be a flow on effect from that. If they win that quick ball, get the physicality right, and get them going backwards, then you can get the likes of our face play shape, get that sorted where you see like Davey chucks in that pass, or you get a one-on-one instead of going into kind of two or three, going backwards and then being able to have slow ball, and then it's really hard to be able to defend, be able to attack from that.
Were you surprised, Jipper, that despite all of the tackles they'd made and the amount of work they'd had to do, that Tupouvahi and Finlay Christie didn't make it onto the field late in the game?
Yeah, I think so, because I think we were probably the team that started the 23-man game, and we utilized our bench so well. So it was surprising, but you can also understand it from an experience point of view, a composure point of view. The two big men in the middle and the skip, Sam and obviously Brody. And then obviously TJ, he's got a lot of experience, and Finn's new on the scene. So that potentially played a part. But I think with the amount of work that was done, it would have been, I suppose, an opportunity to bring some freshness out there and maybe potentially finish on top and win that test match.
What about Ireland? I mean, we've dissected the All Blacks to the nth degree. Ireland, looking at their win against Japan, looking at their win against New Zealand, where do you think they actually sit within the rankings? What's a realistic place in the world, Bryn, for where this Ireland team is right now?
Oh, look, it has to be right up there. I think with the performance that they had on the weekend, and how clinical and relentless and the brutality they brought to the game and the variety that they had on attack that we've talked about. A big thing that Sexton and Farrell said at the post-match conference, post-match meeting was the consistency that they wanted. They want consistency moving forward because, you know, they feel that they've peaked in this kind of area a couple of years out before the World Cup. But I think the two words that they've used is their consistency and their process, having that mindset to be process driven. So they always wanted to continue to get better. And from what I've loved to see, we talked around Japan and even on the weekend, it's their attacking ability and being able to put teams under pressure through their attacking ability. And they've also got the ability to be able to play their game where if they're not going to get that right, Jamison Gibson-Park on the weekend, that's a really good box kicks, and Conway in the previous test match against Japan was able to get up for the ball and get that ball back. So the ability they have to be able to play the kicking game if they need it. You know, Jamison Gibson-Park did a great 50-22 that really brought that momentum back for Ireland, and it was a really great kick to turn it around. So they have that ability to be able to kick, but what I've really enjoyed is their attacking ability that they've had and being able to put teams under pressure. So they'll continue to tinker with that, and how can they evolve that? How can they continue to keep better? But from what I've seen in the last 2 weeks, especially against the All Blacks and how they attacked against Japan, they have to be right up there. But I think for them, the great mindset that they have is they want to be able to continue to keep getting better for that 2023 World Cup, which is, you know, a couple of years away.
Three blokes. You've mentioned a lot about Jamison Gibson-Park, who obviously played really well, who left New Zealand as basically the backup to TJ Petanata at the Hurricanes. James Lowe, who was probably in the All Blacks discussions, but Steve Hansen never picked him up. I suppose there's a lot of wingers around. And then Bundee Aki, I don't think was ever really in the All Black discussion frame, but was always a quality player. Jipper, when you look at these three guys, are they the three that got away? I mean, could they be in the All Blacks right now if they were playing to this quality down here?
Oh, look, I think they're playing at world-class quality, but I think it's always a hard thing to judge because at the time, I think Bundy left around when Sonny was there at the Chiefs. James Lowe was definitely in the mix in terms of people were talking about him being a great option and what he was doing at the Chiefs. And Jamo obviously spent some time at the Blues and then some time at the Canes. But what you got to understand is through experience you get better and better. And what were the versions we're seeing of these three men now are not the versions that left our shores. They've learned a hell of a lot. They've plied their trade over there, and they've got a style to their game that really suits the way I suppose Ireland play and their club teams play.
I really like James Lowe. Dealing with James Lowe when he was at the Chiefs, one of those just honest, straight up and down blokes. And watching that post-match interview, Bryn, these guys are in such an interesting position, being so obviously Kiwi, but so proud of what they're doing at another nation. And when we look at the rules that are changing, the changing face of world rugby is really interesting. When you see people like the Tuilagis or, some in England, some in Samoa, Kiwi players in Ireland, like it's becoming such a gray area as to what a person is and isn't when it comes to their nationality. But, it actually adds to the texture and the storyline and the folklore, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And I think, how much of a special moment would have that been for those three guys? James Lowe, Jamison Gibson-Park and Bundy. You talk around guys that are from New Zealand and played New Zealand rugby, growing up through the ranks and then being able to play at the professional level. And then I think Jipper brings up a really good point around they've grown their game since being away, and they've been at a different style and playing a different way. And so it's been a great opportunity for them to be able to grow and be able to become better players, because I think you are right, Jip. When they did leave, look, they were great rugby players, but I think it just shows how the Northern Hemisphere and where that rugby's got to and how they're developing their games and how much better they've got. And for James Lowe, look, I thought he was outstanding on the weekend, more so for his defensive side. I think, before when he was first selected for Ireland, was under a bit of flak for his defensive ability and making some difficult reads, not making good reads and not sticking his tackle. But, there were two big tackles that I thought were massive. You look at early on in the game, Beauden Barrett puts that crossfield kick for Will Jordan, and James Lowe ends up coming up to make that tackle on Will. And then there's obviously a knock on from that, which we don't score from. And then I think you talked around a drip when Davey goes through and he passes that ball. Was it, I think it was at Akita, one of the Ioane boys. And he makes that tackle for then Omani to be able to get over the ball. So if you look at a guy that, probably when he first played for Ireland, was great with the attacking ability that we've seen in New Zealand, but he's gone away and really worked on those defensive things that he needed to work on. And, there's some great defensive efforts that he did on the weekend, and the passion, you could see the passion, how much it meant to him when the big fella Omani gets that ball. And there's a great picture of him, screaming at the top of his lungs. But again, it just comes back to, you know, he would have loved to have played the New Zealand team, a lot of guys that he would have played with, and to get a result in Ireland, you know, not only for James, but, you know, for Jamieson and Bundy, to get that result against the All Blacks. I can imagine it'll be one of their greatest days in their career, definitely.
After that game, a lot of energy down. You're going into a test match against France, which, you know, people had thought might be the big test match of this series. Do the All Blacks look to freshen up quite a lot this weekend?
Look, Jibber? I think they've got a guy that's obviously arrived that brings so much energy and is probably the perfect guy to have in the tour party right now, and Aaron Smith. And I think he'll bring a lot of energy and excitement to the week. Also think potentially, you know, after the game and how brutal it was and the massive effort Dalton put in, you know, the skipper Sam Kane could potentially come back into the reckoning. And I don't think there'll be wholesale changes, but I think a couple of guys like that with massive experience, massive amounts of respect in the group, and a follow me style, and players that just compete on every play, for the whole 80 minutes could be two guys that could be really utilized well. And it's not on the basis of last week's performance. Like I said, I think Dalton was probably best on ground for the All Blacks, but it could just be the freshness they need to make sure that they, you know, finish this tour the way they want to and make a statement of their own.
We had Anton Leonard-Brown at 12, with Rico Ioane at 13. Do we now just see Haveli slot in at 12, or do we see Quinn Tupaia come in into that mix, Bryn?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
They can go either way, but I think they will go with Davey just for more to that experience. And we're not too sure what's happening with Bodie, if he might not be there. And I think, you know, the fact that Richie will start at 10, probably will start at 10 if that's the case. Having Davey and him working together, look, they've got a combination there. They've played with the Crusaders for a long period of time, not just at 12, but when he was at 15, and their kind of combination of cohesion that they have together, I think will be pretty big. And then obviously Rico, again, I think will slot in at 13 and stay there at 13. But, you know, for those guys, it's really important. We talked around it, the physicality and collision. If you don't win that and you're not getting over the advantage line, it doesn't matter who you are, you can't play that game. You can't play what you wanted. You can't manipulate the defense as much as you want. So I see that probably those are the two guys that that I'll see that'll slot into 12 with Davey. And then, you know, that might bring Quintipire onto the bench possibly, who knows. But, you know, I'm definitely thinking Davey will be at 12 with Richie at 10 if Bodie's no good to go this week.
A few, same Jipper?
Yeah, look, let's not lose faith in our lads. You know, like, they're real quality players. We don't need to hit the panic button, in my opinion. And I think that experience and I suppose the season, I think Dave would admit he's probably not in the form he was in that June series, but he still was the guy that delivered that miracle ball to free up Will Jordan the other day as well. So, look, I don't think we'll see too many changes. I just think being calm and composed in selections during the week and going into this French test with that mindset and attitude will set them up for success.
The Black Ferns have also got another test against France. They went down 38-13. This series just continues to get tougher for them as they go on, just against high-quality outfits, and they're just being outplayed, Bryn. What did you take out of that game?
It was tough, I think, because more so for the same problems that we've talked about. The line out more, the French were again outstanding in that department, and we talked about it last week that they were probably going to go there knowing the success that the English woman had in the previous games. And what I did like, it was the variety. The halfbacks made really good decisions around the line out mauls, and they would set up for two tries. The first one goes down that blind side because they're reserve number 20 ends up going in and takes that opportunity just through how dominant that maul was, and then they end up scoring another set piece try through a maul. And then there's also another one where the halfback goes to the open side and ends up scoring there. So yeah, we did talk around, Jip talked around, there are solutions possibly that you can try and nullify our set piece defence at the moment, but I think they might just have to go away post this tour and start getting some really good plans in place, some ideas of how they're going to try and get that a lot better, because I think it has been the Achilles heel of the Black Ferns, unfortunately, for this campaign. But then also, I think also in that first half, the second half, the French really dominated set piece wise, but the first half, their attacking ability was great. I think their second one of their tries was in the 14th minute. Bennett, the fullback, scores that try. And I think it was a poor kick. Jipper, you alluded to previously with the Black Ferns that the kicking game hasn't got what they've wanted out of it. And so it was a poor kick. And then the ability to be able to have the offload game and really play on top of them was great to see. And then the crossfield kick to be able to really finish off that try was great to see some attacking flair and prowess from the French that we love to see both in the men's and in the women's. So for the French, I was really impressed. The attacking ability that they had in the first half, being able to score tries through that. And then in the second half, just really dominating when it came to the mauls and being able to take the good options from that driving maul from their halfbacks was pretty good to see.
James?
Well, I think probably the coach summed it up pretty well. He's just said we're not battle-hardened yet, and that's probably a fair reflection of where they're at in terms of their preparation and their lead into this hasn't probably set them up as best as they'd like, but you've got to work with the situations you've got, and they certainly won't be used as an excuse. But the one thing they will get out of the tour is a real clear picture of the areas they need to work on and make shifts in so that they can be a force at home in the World Cup next year.
That is a positive. That's a silver lining. You are very much the optimist. Was there anything else that they improved on, Jipper, that you saw? Anything that came out of the England games? The scoreline was obviously a little bit smaller, but were there parts of their game that have improved?
Look, I think in patches, they've shown quite a good attack structure and they've held onto the ball and they've put them under pressure. I suppose they just haven't been able to finish it off, and they've got the ability to do the tight work as well. So I think in patches, what we're talking about is areas they want to improve on. But the thing is they show in moments that they can do it. I suppose it's just getting that consistency, and I suppose a lot of that will go into the S&C plans, I'd say, and making sure that they're physically ready for the test match level of intensity that England and France have brought to them.
Is it noticeable, Bryn, the fitness is quite different between these teams? Because they do seem very fresh towards the end of the game, both the English and the French.
Well, I think it just comes back to the preparation side of it. And, the likes that they get to play, 10 to 12 test matches a year, the French and the English. So you talk around battle hardened, it's being able to play against the high quality opposition week in, week out, to be able to, rectify a few things or improve your game. And, I guess playing those kind of really intensity, massive intensity when it comes to playing test matches. And so we're just missing it. We haven't been able to play against that kind of caliber of players for a couple of years now. And yes, we've been fortunate enough to play the Wallaroos and we've probably won those convincingly, but I think just the level that we need to get up to is play those kind of nations and be able to play at that level. But what they will do from that, they have gone over there and, we have got a World Cup next year that's the big goal. And I guess for them, it's a real eye-opener to see whether they need to improve in some of the things we've talked around set piece wise and, even probably patches in their attack that they've had the ball but not been able to get the points that they want. So, there's going to be no worries around this. I think more so it's just going to be, can they make the learnings in the short amount of time that they're going to have? Because I think we do have a few test matches next year, but I think every test match that we do have, it's going to be bloody important for us to be able to try and learn and get the things that we need to, knowing that we're just not as experienced having the amount of test matches that the other Six Nation countries have had.
When you looked at the Springboks 2 years out from the 2019 Men's World Cup, they were an absolute shambles, and Russie came in and sorted them out, and the next thing you know, they've won a World Cup. It looks unlikely this far out, but is it realistic that this could be turned around, Jipper?
Oh, I think so, because they're not major fixes. Like, we're talking with LD, some kick strategy stuff. Like I said, like, some of their attack phase play stuff is actually top notch, and I suppose if they can, as I said, those S and C is the ability to live at that intensity for 80 minutes. I think like they're not going to have to reinvent the wheel, is probably what I'm trying to say. So they'll have a real clear idea how their camps need to run. I think the one positive is they'll have a real clear picture of what next season looks like in terms of their prep and where they need to get to, which is, you know, yeah, it's tough at the moment. They certainly won't be enjoying these heavy losses, but there has to be some good coming. It'll be a big part of it.
Let's move on to the French men, that is, went up against Georgia as a preparation for playing the All Blacks, 41-15. Did you see much of it, Bryn? And how does that bode ahead of the test against the All Blacks?
Oh, look, I think patchy would probably be the best way to describe it. And, you know, knowing that the All Blacks are probably next week and wanted to implement a few things going towards that test match. But, look, I just don't think you can take too much from it. Yes, they were able to implement a lot of things, but I think it was good for the Georgians to be able to, you know, put them under that amount of pressure. So I think more so it'll be good for them to take the learnings from that test match and how they played. But I think more so, like, the next week when they do get to play, they know that level is going to go up, and I think they're almost going to be ready for what's going to come. And seeing how successful the Irish were against the All Blacks, I know the French will definitely be looking forward for this opportunity, because look, they've probably seen this one on the calendar, knowing that the All Blacks is going to be the last test match of the year, and then any time the French play the All Blacks, it's always a good encounter.
They used to be the bogey team, didn't they? The Irish are probably the bogey team now, but when we look at what England have got against Wales, Jipper, goodness me, England really are the Wallabies bogey team. 8 wins in a row, 32-15 on the weekend. How would Dave Rennie be feeling after that?
Oh, look, I think they're fighting. They've got a lot of injuries, and they are gritting their teeth, and that 32-15 certainly does not, I suppose, reflect how that game played out. There was a late try where the Wallabies were trying things on, but for the amount of opportunities England had, and I suppose similar to the All Blacks, the ability the Wallabies had to hold them out and stay in that game for, you know, 70-odd minutes, 72 minutes, massive for I suppose their culture, like losing, but there's, you know, their physical prowess around their counter rucks, their own breakdowns. The one thing that I think is potentially concerning is that they've gone away from their possession territory game and they're kicking a lot away. And I think if you remember, they were holding on to the ball, building a lot of phases that are real clear and not doing 50-50s. They're quite ruthless and disciplined in their attack structure. Mm. I think they've just got a little bit sloppy in terms of their skill set and probably got excited with how well they're doing back home and probably haven't you know, cherished that ball as much as they should have on this tour. And that's what's put them in, I suppose, the two back-to-back losses that we've seen you know, last week and this week.
Yeah. I think also, Ross, on that as well, I think, you know, it's the ill-discipline as well that's really hurting them. Look, I know there's 2 yellow cards and, you know, it's unfortunate you're always going to get yellow. You know, it seems at the moment there's always going to be a yellow card, you know, if you put yourself in that position. But, you know, any time you're giving away 18 penalties and having 2 yellow cards against a team like that, especially with injuries, or it's not the injuries, the injuries and players that hadn't gone over on the tour with, like, Quade Coop and Karevi, it just makes it a lot harder. So I think you've brought a fight. It's a really good word, Jip, that you've used, because I think they are fighting and they are trying. Obviously, there's some players that they needed that were so successful for them in the rugby championship with Quade Cooper, especially Karevi. Karevi's a massive loss for them, I find. But any time you have that kind of ill discipline of giving away 18 penalties and two yellow cards, with the stuff that Jip said, it's just making it a lot harder. They've probably just lost that kind of confidence that they had in that rugby championship just due to the fact of those things.
England mixed things up a little bit, Jipper. Manu Tuilagi on the wing, although he wasn't there all the time. What did you make of the way that they mixed things up in their back line against Australia?
Yeah, I tell you what, I enjoyed the battle between him and Hunter Paisami. There was some big body contact going in that midfield. Look, he runs with direct intent and makes a dent in the defence, but I thought the Wallabies handled him well, but it's more so what he managed to create after that. So he sucks in a lot of defenders and put them under pressure. And actually, you know, Bryn mentioned those 18 penalties. A lot of the time was around the breakdowns or being caught offside after he had carried the ball directly in the midfield. So he's a serious weapon. He's got no regard for his body, especially when he was coming off some of those goal line dropouts. But it's entertaining to watch and a serious weapon. But I don't know if the right wing is his position. I think he probably showed that he could really mix it up outside Farrell and Marcus Smith at 13, I believe.
I'm not sure if you guys saw it. After the game, Eddie Jones started talking about the jerseys on the back, the numbers on the back of the rugby jerseys. You know, generally, we got 1 through 23. And he was talking about the way that he, you know, selected Manu Tuilagi at 14, but really played a lot of the game in the midfield. And, you know, once you get past the set piece, numbers on the jerseys don't matter so much. It's very rare that 12 passes to 13, passes to 14, et cetera, throughout the game. What would you guys make of the concept of throwing those numbers out the window, going NBA style, where you pick your own number and have your name on the back of the shirt? Bryn?
Oh, look, I think the purists would probably wouldn't like that, to be honest. I think it, you've got a pretty good understanding of who's the centre and who's not when you're not so used to the player's name. But, I think Eddie is always someone that thinks outside the box. It's not controversial, but you know, it's very opinionated in what he thinks. So, it'll be, I tell you what, if I see the day, it'll be, I'll be one who hope to get my number out there that I want on the back of my jersey.
What would that be?
79, mate. It'd be 79. But that's it, you know. I'd look like an idiot. I'd look like an idiot having 79 on the back of my jersey, you know. So, who knows? Could be that tens competition that we talked about, Ross. Something like that, possibly. Getting a kind of festival feel and letting the boys treasure their numbers. But international, I'm a young guy, but I'm still a bit of a purist and like seeing that number 9 or number 13 or number 15 flowing around.
You're a purist, Jipper. You wouldn't be wearing anything number 2, would you?
It'd be a hard no for me. I think, you know, like that's what you grow up, you're wanting to wear the number that you desire on the back. And I think if you start picking your own, I don't know. It's not for me, Ross, put it that way.
It could be good marketing. You could sell more jerseys because, you know, if you can turn up and buy, let's say, Smith number 9 or Smith number 72 or whatever he chooses, you know, you do build up the individual stars. And when you look at sports like the American sports or football, for instance, and you see the numbers and the names and the way that that can be sold and be so powerful, you know, the number 23 is a number, but it's Michael Jordan's number and everyone knows it. You know what I mean? That it's such a strong marketing tool.
I think also in terms of how they retire numbers and things like that, you get opportunities to acknowledge legends of the game in that way. But I haven't put a lot of thought into it till now, but I personally wouldn't be in a hurry to see it.
Fair enough. Hey, let's rush through these other games. Pimpy, Stuart Hogg both got doubles. Springboks too much in the end for Scotland. Bryn, you surprised by the way that played out?
Not a lot, to be honest. I think the biggest things that I enjoyed about seeing from South Africa was probably the growth there I wanted to see in the rugby championship, especially on the edge around their attacking ability. And Jip alluded it to earlier, a little bit earlier in the podcast, but the ability from them to go to width and then Delande, especially in both those tries to Malpipi, was able to stay really square. One of them, he actually goes square and gives it to Khaleesi, who then gives it away to Malpipi down the blind side, down the wing, and then they end up scoring. And then the second try is Delande goes through, staying square, gets through with his speed, and then puts it away, a great ball to Malpipi as well. So that's what I really enjoyed seeing in that kind of encounter for the Springboks, because against the All Blacks, when they did try to play, they weren't running square down the line and fixing those players. So it was nice to see that happen. And then the Scots as well, you know, Stuart Hogg scores two good tries, and I guess the one that I really enjoyed was the one where they scored in right close to the line off the line out maul. That delivery from Price, don't underestimate how long and how good that pass is to be able to get enough width to be able to get it to the 12 and then gives it up the back to the 10 and has a little bit of animation around that and to then give the ball away to Hogg to then score that try. That was a really nice play that I saw. And then I think, to be honest, the 67th and the 70th minute, you know, Kitsoff and Marks again coming off the bench and making massive plays with turnovers to really, I guess, ice that game and to be able to win the game. And so, you know, Kitsoff and Marks, you're a big man of him, Jip. You know, we need to see him play more minutes. But I think, you know, in those kind of games when he is playing at the back end, he does the Kitsoff and Marks do this time and time again in big moments in the back end of test matches and making big plays around massive steals. And then, you know, they end up going from 21-15 to 27-15 due to those two penalties late in the piece.
Mate, I think it as well. The Scots will be a little bit disappointed because they were up for this game. They came with the right intent, but they had a high turnover count and they had a high penalty count, and it just relieved so much pressure for the Springboks. And you mentioned Marks. Like, he's just such a big impact, man. Like, I think they brought him on, I think it was just before the break, that they changed the whole front row. But it's quite a power play for them now. Like, if you're a front row and you know you've just got to empty the tank for 40, you can do a lot more, I believe, and you can sort of impose yourself on the game. Because I thought the starters were actually handy as well, and the presence they brought in the first 39 minutes. So it's a true weapon of theirs having those boys come off the bench. I know they probably want to be starting, and I want to see more of Mark's playing. Because he's just great to watch from my point of view, but it's working for the Springboks. And I like that you mentioned the edge play. Delendi goes undercover. I don't think he gets enough reps, in terms of if you're picking World 15s or anything like that. Like, he's a solid customer. And you talk about line speed pressure. Whenever there's that line speed pressure, man, he just goes in on an angle and runs it hard. And then he has the ability out on the edge to stay square, split defences and set up his outsides to score tries. And defensively, he brings a lot of presence as well. And I think he's had a huge year and been a big reason as to why the Springboks will remain number one after a year out of footy, as guys like him and the performance and growth, I suppose, of their individual game. And I suppose, lastly, the biggest thing of growth I've started to notice with the Springboks is Sia Khaleesi on the edge. Some of his skill set, his ability to hold the ball up, suck defenders in. Like, Mpibi had like a meter to work with that first try, and it was all to the ability that Sia had that ball in his hands, two hands holding it, and they had to bite on him, otherwise he was going to keep going, and then he offloads perfectly. So I think there's a lot of their players that are just performing out of their skin and doing extremely well on the end of your tour.
Fiji also looked pretty impressive, despite the fact that they were down 2 men at some stage and pushed Wales, maybe not the strongest Welsh team, but pushed Wales pretty hard all the way to the end. I think it was at 38-23, the final score. Fiji this year have been comers. They've looked really good against some high-quality teams. Maybe it'll be justified to get them a little bit more game time against top-tier test nations, Brent.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, it just comes back to how competitive they have been. You know, they pushed the All Blacks in that test match, we had to really dig in really hard. And then, you know, for the second test match, we actually ended up doing a little bit better. But I think, for me, the fact that they had that red card, which, you know, you can understand how it was a red card, which is unfortunate, the fact that it was so low to the ground. But like we've talked about a lot, you can't be able to go anywhere near the head, and you know, was given that red card to that, and then having two yellow cards was tough for them as well. But I guess the big turning moment in that match was how fast Reece Zammit is, because you know, it was late, as you know, it was the 73rd minute of the game, and the game was really in the balance, and you know, they went down that edge and he puts that kick in, and you know, Benny Volavola, I thought, had it covered, and then you know, he ends up showing his speed and puts that ball down, which pretty much, if anything, you know, got them winning that game, and then makes it a little bit more comfortable. But look, the Fijians, the attacking ability, even the first trial that they had, the ability around their face play shape, being able to hit that hard line into that space to score that first try, was great. Was a great start for them. But I think that the biggest thing for the Fijians, and if they can keep and improve this for the 2023 World Cup, is their set piece and their line out maul defence. You know, Wales scored two tries off that, and so I think in big moments and in big test matches, the ability to be able to not have line out more drives or scrum penalties to fall for points is going to be massive for Fiji and rugby moving forward. And I know Jason Ryan has been in and around that and will continue to keep growing that, but I think if they want to contest and be able to win those kind of games and big test matches, their set piece, especially line out more in their scrum and being able to win moments in that and not being able to give points away, will be big for them moving forward.
Quickly through the Brave Blossoms, maybe blossoming not quite as much at the moment after, you know, some solid performances earlier in the year. Portugal, 38-25. Should we read anything into this, Chipper?
Oh, look, I think it just shows, you know, like you can't just turn up, I think, in test matches and teams that I suppose aren't expected to perform use that as firepower to get themselves up, and they certainly fronted on this occasion. But I don't think it's anything that needs to be panicked about. It's you know, coming to the end of a long season for the Japanese team and what they've had to do in their clubs, but also they had quite a long camp. I think there was a month-long camp for playing the Wallabies, so they do get through their work. They certainly don't hold back on the hours they put into their game. So maybe a few of their bodies are just starting to tire and looking forward to an off-season.
Argentina, Bryn, 37-16 over Italy. There must just be relief in the camp, you know, after what's been a pretty torrid year, just to pick up a win like that. Even if it's against an Italy team that's not the best in the world, it must just feel nice for them, something for them to work from.
Oh, absolutely. We've talked around, you know, the preparation side and how much of a tough season it was for the Rugby Championship and even this India tour as well. But yeah, look, it doesn't matter who it's against. And again, the win on tour and, you know, getting that winning feeling again would be really important for that group, not for just this year, but, you know, moving forward for what's to come in the next year. So I think the biggest thing for them is be able to have a plan in place and the preparation side of having a sustainable like pre-season where they can come in together, whether they can or not, I'm not too sure, but have plans in place for when they do come back next year for the Rugby Championship. They can give the better performance like they did last year where they beat the All Blacks and were actually really competitive in one of those games. So, yeah, but look, anytime we can get a win, they'll take it, and no doubt they would have had, you know, possibly a few lemonades after their game just to have a bit of relief and a bit of camaraderie and good feeling after, you know, winning a test match for a long, long time.
Okay, prediction time. I can't remember actually how the boys went last week. Did you guys go all right last week in your predictions?
No, I picked the Wallabies.
Who did I pick? No, I picked England. I think I went all right, actually. Yeah,
I obviously picked the All Blacks as well, so it wasn't a great one.
You kind of have to pick
the All Blacks, statistics. I don't have enough confidence to pick Ireland, so no.
I'm pretty sure Bryn chose the Scots again. Bryn got the Scots again, so I don't think he had a great weekend, Bryn.
You wanted me to. Did I pick Scotland, did I? No, I picked
you did, mate.
I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah, nah. You're still living off that week one multi.
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, let's start with Black Ferns versus France then. Any chance of a turnaround here? Either of you, France?
I don't think so. But I would hope to see a shift and I suppose potentially tightening the deficit.
Okay, All Blacks versus France. What are the chances here? All Blacks win? Bounce back? Bryn?
Yeah.
Going to go the All Blacks, and I expect their breakdown and the efficiency, and whether Aaron Smith comes back in for that quick ball, if he does come back, or even whoever's at halfback, I reckon we're going to get a little bit more quick ball and ask a lot more questions on the attack side of the ball.
They like to stay connected and really work together as a line across. So I think it's going to pose opportunities for us to, you know, be at our best. Because if we're given that time and space, we know what we can do.
Styles make fights. England versus the Springboks, probably the game of the weekend, maybe. Which way are you going, Bryn?
I'm going to go South Africa. Go South Africa. I think their set piece, I think they'll try and dominate the English set piece, which I think is going to be a great encounter because, look, I think you got Mario Toji, Courtney Laws as well. So, look, there's a lot of guys that that go well in the set piece department for England. So I think that's going to be the winner of the game. Whoever wins that gets that set piece parity at scrum time and line out.
Yeah, look, I think Springboks, Big part of it is that front row substitution. Like, these test matches are so physically demanding, and that Wallabies English test was brutal, just as much as that Springboks Scottish test, and this will be no different. So that firepower off the bench and being able to spread that load through more players is a massive, massive thing for them.
Okay, Wales Wallabies. Where are we going, Brent?
I'm going to go Wallabies to get their first win. Yep, be their first win. It'll be a tight tussle, though.
I'm sticking with my boys, the Wallabies, mate.
That assistant coaching gig with Dave is still in the offing. You yeah. Keep going there, don't you?
I'm not jumping ship, mate. I reckon they're just building nicely. But they do have some injuries. Like, they had a guy who debuted that left Aussie, 6 years ago at tight head prop, Norris. So, the cattle are running dry. They're at the end of their season. Michael Hooper limped off as well, but I think they'll get up for it.
Okay. What else we got? Ireland, Argentina, straightforward?
Yep.
You'd think so, but you never know. I know the Argies have had a tough run, but it'll be, talk about styles and fights, 51 kicks Argentina put in against Italy. So it's not going to be what the Irish saw against the All Blacks. So they'll have to make sure, I suppose, their counter-attack game is on point, because they won't have the territory dominance that they saw last weekend.
I think it's going to be important as well, just for the fact you talk around consistency that Sexton and Farah have talked about. You would think after the highs of beating the All Blacks, it's time to be able to keep playing well, get the consistency, and keep winning these kind of test matches that they need to. That's the kind of mindset that they have. So, it'll be a good test for them. They will see what they need.
Okay, Scotland, Japan. It seems like Scotland.
Yeah. Scotland are a good side, man. They're playing some good footy. It was just their discipline probably let them down on the weekend.
Fiji, Georgia. This is a tricky one. Fiji for you guys, or can Georgia mount an upset here?
I'm gonna go Fiji, but I just would not be surprised. It's one of these kind of games that you'd think Fiji should win after their performance on the weekend. That they could just, have that kind of tight tussle in Georgia, make it really tough in it. It could be a couple points in it. But I'm gonna go Fiji, but I think it's gonna be quite a tight game.
Yeah, look, I'll go Fiji as well, but they need to, because they're bringing a lot of that physical dominance early in a test match, and we saw with the cards and I suppose the wanting to have that, I suppose that aggressive presence, it's just controlling that, and making sure that they're doing it legally, because when they do it legally, it's just as effective, if not more. So I think that'll be the big factor. As long as they can keep their discipline in check, they should win that game convincingly.
Well, here's hoping we have a better weekend this weekend for New Zealand sports fans. Obviously, it was a bit tough watching the cricket and losing that final to Australia. The All Blacks didn't go great, and neither did the Black Ferns. Let's hope this weekend the All Blacks and the Black Ferns can put up a bigger performance and give us all something to smile about. Bryn Hall down in Christchurch, James Parsons in Auckland, thank you, guys. I'm Ross Carl. That was another Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Catch you next week. Mā te wā.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.